Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
So we're joined by a new friend of the Paracast this week with Gene and Chris, and that's Richard Saradet, but he is not a stranger if you're listening to Dark Matters radio show from our friend Don Ecker. You've heard him. Radio Misterioso from none other than Greg Bishop. You've heard about Richard. And we're going to ask why Greg called Richard the Quiet Researcher. But first, we should introduce him to our audience since it's his first time here. So welcome, Richard.
Well, thank you, Gene. It's a pleasure to be here with you and Chris.
Now, if we go back to your history, you go to the Internet Movie Database. You find the name Richard Saradet. You did a 3-year stint on General Hospital.
Yep. Mm-hmm. I'm not a doctor, but I played one on TV, you know.
Well, there's some doctors that you visit in the real world you think might have played one on TV based on their knowledge, but we don't want to criticize doctors. Most are really dedicated professionals.
Except
the ones who always try to find something they can do to exact a few $1,000 out of you. Like my wife went to an eye doctor a couple of weeks ago for a vision issue and a test, and he's starting to list all the laser stuff they can do to her.
They're all recruiting, man. It's like, it's incredible. It's just amazing.
Okay, so you played a faux doctor, as they say.
Actually, I played a lawyer, actually, so I didn't really play a doctor on General Hospital. I was a Harvard-bred lawyer, Howard Lansing,
okay.
The Rock.
So are there replays of these soaps from those years that people can see you?
You know, a couple of the actors I work with now, again, are putting up clips. Like, I see Denise Alexander, who played, at the time, she was kind of queen of the soap. I was on from like 78 to 81. And she was like the queen of the soap. Do you remember the character that Sally Field played in that movie, Soap, or Marla's movie?
Oh, that with Robert Downey Jr. Field. And you just knew that Robert Downey Jr. owned the stage whenever he was on.
He just grabbed a hold of it. Right. I mean, he owns the stage whenever he's on it. He's just an amazing actor.
I just saw The Avengers the other day. A lot of great actors there. Golden Globe Awards and everything. Robert Downey Jr. as Iron Man gets there, and that's it.
That's it. He's just smarter than everybody else around him. That's it.
Okay, so basically the soap character in a comedy movie, very funny movie, that Sally Field did, this is loosely based on the kind of characters you see in a soap like General Hospital.
Yeah, and a kind of an exaggerated sense of what it's like backstage, you know, the competition, the backbiting, the desperation. You know, I remember when I first came on the show, and I'd never even seen a soap opera when I got this interview and I got the job. You know, I'd never seen this whole operation with the three cameras and the sets just stacked up side by side. And the cameras roll from one set to another and you just keep moving, you know. And you're doing, you know, 44 minutes of television a day in the can, you know. And when I do film work, you know, you might get 2 or 3 minutes of film in the can in a day. It's more like doing stage work, you know. You really got to have your stuff down. Occasionally they stop and reshoot a scene. But if they have to reshoot a lot of scenes, man, it gets too expensive. You know, you end up in those 12, 16-hour days and lots of overtime. So one of the prerequisites is you got to be able to do it and do it fast.
Now, remember, before we had wide use of videotape and stuff like that, in the 50s, I guess part of the 60s, they were doing those things live, like a play, with missteps and all.
Yeah, that era had ended, thank God.
Let me ask you a fast question. Your departure from General Hospital, did they kill you off or what?
No. I went off to Europe to console myself after one of my clients. I found her dead in her apartment. So they, you know, they kind of truncated my storyline because there were various reasons. One is they brought a woman on board who was going to become my love interest, but she was so intimidated by the producer, Gloria Monty, that she could never relax on camera. She'd be fine in rehearsals, but the moment we get on camera and I'd say something to her and look at her, it was like looking into a deer in the headlights, you know, and she'd be looking for that line and kind of flattened out and just kind of desperate. And they kept waiting for her to relax. They gave her about 6 months and they finally just flushed it. And when they flushed her, they flushed the guy who played her husband, who played my brother on the show. I'd come on the show after them, but they said, okay, we're flushing that whole storyline. And they all got fired and I ended up staying. I said, well, we'll just plug you in here and there because, you know, we want to keep using you. But I just kind of dribbled around in the background until the end of my contract. And I got offered other contracts in New York City from other ABC soaps. And I went, you know what? I don't want to do any more soap. I decided to kick out. And that's when I started making money in commercials and then doing an occasional guest star appearance on TV shows.
Like Knots Landing and like The Bionic Woman. So you have a little genre connection there.
Yeah.
But if we are remembering the commercials of the 80s, and we'll get to your paranormal background in a moment. If we remember the commercials from the 1980s, what products will we remember your voice or face?
With a beard, riding a bicycle, I was in a commercial for the first commercial for Bud Light when they were introducing Bud Light. It's another one of those showbiz stories where I just come off of GH. I went with my wife to Aspen for 3 weeks to ski because she had a house there that she co-owned with somebody else. And so we skied for 3 weeks. I let my beard grow. I came back to town. You know, okay, General Hospital's over. Now I got to go out and find new work. And, you know, the beard was sort of like, make sure you distance yourself from that character everybody sees you as. And my commercial agent said, you're dead with a beard. There's no work for you with a beard. There's no commercial work for you with a beard. Then a request came along for somebody with bicycle riding experience for this Bud Light commercial. And they said, you're perfect for this, but you got to shave the beard. I said, well, I'm not going to shave it unless you get a call back or something. He said, well, they've never used a beard, Richard. Anheuser-Busch has never used a beard. I went, oh, well, okay. So I went on the audition, and they taped me on a stationary bike, you know, and throwing my hands in the air across the finish line. Next thing I know, they're flying me up to Eugene, Oregon for 4 days of shooting. You know, you have to be really in shape because they tried to shoot this thing with professional bicycle races, but they couldn't get their quote-unquote performance out of them. So they sent back to L.A. They were already up there in the middle of production looking for a replacement actor. So I got flown up in the middle of it, had to jump right in. On the second day, after doing this hill climb 4 times with all the professional riders, you know, the client from the ad agency says, you know why you got the job? I said, no, the beard. He said, that's it.
Oh, boy.
I love the irony.
Yeah, that's Hollywood all the way down the line.
Now, of course, Chris has been with and without beard. As far as I got was the mustache a long, long time ago in that other galaxy. Okay.
Dang, Gene, that's a scary thought.
Me and a mustache, huh? You know, it was the 70s.
It's the cop look, man. It's the men at work look, you know?
That's right. You know, you look at, you know, Mad Men or something. There it goes. Anyway, the paranormal. You've been an actor. You're a teacher now. How does the paranormal enter this game?
Well, paranormal is not a term I would have used when I got into this game. You know, getting into the game of the paranormal is more like trying to find things to explain your own experiences. A lot of people get in the UFO field because they're trying to go, well, what was that I saw? What was that happened? And I come from a family which... my mother was like that. My grandmother was like that. We'd have what they used to call second sight, you know. So throughout my growing up, I had interesting and weird experiences. Nothing I would relate to the field of UFOs or abduction. But when I first came to Hollywood in 1971, after the Army and after going back to the University of Kansas, getting my degree in theater, came out here, you know, a degree in theater and a dollar would get you a cup of coffee. And, you know, I was trying to pursue that. But at the same time, I was very interested in this. I'd also gone through, you know, like many of our generation, I'd explored other states of consciousness with drugs, LSD and psilocybin and DMT. I'd kind of tasted a little bit of everything. I never pursued it like repetitively because I was very cautious about it. I you know, the experiences were intense and I didn't see it as a recreational thing. I saw it more as an investigation thing and it was very draining. And eventually, after 4 or 5 or 6 experiences, I went, okay, that's good for me. You know, I left it alone. But then over the next few years, the insights I've gotten from that, those experiences, the idea that so much is controlled by the way we perceive things and how our mind runs through things. You know, and you watch his mind run when you're on a psychedelic sometimes. Like if you see something a little bit scary and you pay attention to it, suddenly it blossoms into something really scary. And, you know, experienced trippers would say, go with the flow, go with the flow, don't fight it. Because if you fight it, it just intensified. If you rode it, it usually broke out into something else. You know, that's one thing I discovered. So it helped me examine how I operated, so to speak. And then I began to leaving drugs behind. I began to really pursue a kind of a spiritual path of, through the Edgar Cayce Foundation, ARE. And I eventually started a study group that met once a week in my house. And about 5 or 6 would meet, and we'd do a little Search for God study program, which involved choosing a focal point every week of something you're going to work on, like cooperation or meditation, something like this, and you'd have a little theme for the week, and you'd try to apply it, and next week come back and say how it went.
I'll tell you what, that's fine how this goes, okay? Richard Saradet joining Gene and Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
Hey, neighbors, you've seen all those crazy, wacky products on TV. The perfect tortilla, easy covers, hot booties, furniture fix, petty spin, and more. Where do you find all that stuff? You go to asseenontv.com because this is the one-stop source for all of these TV goods advertised. Find all your favorites as seen on TV. Check them out as seenontv.com. And by the way, save 10%. Here's what you do. Use the code SEEN1, S-E-E-N number 1, SEEN1. Go to asseenontv.com to order. Save 10%. Purchase this summer's hottest As Seen on TV items. Save 10%. Or call 1-866-277-3366. 1-866-277-3366. The code SEEN1 to save 10%.
Good day, Jim Newcomer from Midas Resources, October 5th, 2012. Gold opened this morning at $1,791.80. A 1 ounce gold coin can be purchased for $1,835.80, $9,17.90 for a half ounce, or $4,58.95 for a quarter ounce. That's $1,835.80, $9,17.90, and $4,58.95.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. Have you ever wondered why banks, stockbrokers, investment advisors won't talk about gold IRAs? Wait a sec. Gold and silver is going up while Congress is trying to settle on the next debt increase. And there's no end to this madness. That old 401k and IRA can be converted into physical gold without tax consequences. I explained this in my book, 10 Reasons to Buy Gold. Don't let time slip away. Call for your free copy today, 800-686-2237. Get away from that Washington spin and get honest answers about gold. 800-686-2237. The book is free, 800-686-2237.
Digestive health is the key to wellness and elimination of toxins. That bears repeating. Digestive health is the key to wellness and elimination of toxins. And Pro-EM-1 Daily Probiotic Cleanse is the key to digestive health. Pro-EM-1 is a powerful liquid probiotic, strong enough to cleanse, gentle enough to use every day. Pro-EM-1 is dairy, wheat, and soy free. Contains all natural and certified organic ingredients. Contains no preservatives or animal products. Supports a healthy digestive and immune system. Supports weight loss. Improves absorption of food nutrients. Aids in controlling yeast infections. Is never freeze-dried. And uses three groups of live, viable, beneficial microbes to cleanse and remove toxins. Order Pro-EM-1 Daily Probiotic Cleanse at Terraganics.com. Spelled TerraGanix.com. TerraGanix.com. Or call toll-free 866-369-3678. That's 866-369-3678. Pro-EM-1, the raw probiotic.
What's safer and cheaper than prescription drugs?
Glad you asked. The answer is renovation teas. Herbal remedies are much safer and much cheaper than prescription drugs. Taste great, and most importantly, herbal teas are effective and non-addictive. Renovation tea is especially unique, and here's why. We spent years researching herbs and their beneficial properties. Renovation Teas uses only 100% organic, fair trade herbs. Our teas are blended towards specific ailments and health conditions, such as diabetes, blood pressure, anxiety, libido, detox, and much more. All Renovation Teas are formulated and hand-filled in Arkansas. Take care of yourself naturally, the way Mother Nature intended. Order Renovation Teas at renovationtea.com or call 870-784-3121. That's 870-784-3121. Renovation Teas. Renovate your health one bag at a time.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
We're back with the quiet researcher himself, Richard Saradet, joining Gene and Chris on the Paracast. You've heard Richard on Dark Matters Radio, Radio Misterioso, and all other places like that. But I want to find out, before we get into the main subject of our session, this phrase, the quiet researcher, from where did it originate?
I think it comes from the fact that I met Greg way back in the early 90s when I was working very, very closely with UFO Magazine, with Don and Vicky. Don and I had partnered. I'd approached him and made a deal to say, look, I want to develop projects for film and television around this subject, and I've been reading your magazine, and you guys are good, and you're the only game in town. So we partnered, and then Don and I developed ideas for a show. Actually, we developed what you see as UFO Hunters today. We really developed that kind of concept way back in the early 90s, and then we were out pitching it like 32 episodes, and we put them out there, and we were just ahead of the curve. The pitching to the producers and pitching to the networks. I'd get the meetings, we'd go in, they'd be fascinated, they'd ask for more information, and then we'd never hear from them again, you know.
Now, this is the way Hollywood works.
Yeah.
They seem to be interested in the concept. You go there and you do what is called the pitch, which is some kind of super sales job, right?
Right.
Okay. But you never really know what's going to happen. Is there any way to read?
Yeah, you know what's going to happen. They're going to rip off your good idea and run with it.
Well, there is that.
Well, yeah, and that's actually exactly what happened, Chris. That's exactly what happened to Don and I, and it was very frustrating. But, you know, it's sort of like, this sounds a little bit like the embittered guy, and maybe it is a little bit. It's like there's a kind of an informal club of people at the top, and it's like if they want you in the club, they let you in. If they don't, they just take what they want from you and move on, you know. And this is the experience of most people in Hollywood. I have several friends who are screenwriters who have just been directly ripped off, and I mean even by Spielberg's outfit, Dreamland, you know. DreamWorks. They would just take a script, one of the sub-producers, not necessarily Spielberg himself. My friend had sold him one script for $350,000, and then they started hiring him as a script fixer. And then he submitted another one of the scripts to one of the producers. The guy returned in about a week and said, no, not interested. In the following weeks, he sees the script with small alterations, was just sold, he saw it in Variety, to DreamWorks by this producer for $1 million. And he was like, wait a minute, that's my script. So he contacts his manager and says, hey, and the response was very interesting. They go, well, yeah, we're not taking them on. You know, no, we got to have a relationship with those guys. If we do that, we'll never get any ins there again.
I want to ask a question here. As I understand it, because I've written treatments myself on a few occasions, very few, and you see where they went. I've written some treatments. You register this information at the Writers Guild,
right,
which is the writers' union. Supposedly, if you do that, the concept is copyrighted. For writers, they shouldn't steal it. That doesn't stop them.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't. It's just the big boys get their way. That's the way it is. You know what I mean?
Well, the irony here, though, that you and Don come out with an idea of something like a UFO Hunters type of show in the 90s, and we look at Don being involved with UFO Magazine, then he sells it off to Bill Burns, who then, with the people he worked with, sold the idea of UFO Hunters. Any direct connection or what?
We don't know. We really don't know. Because part of the purchase of the magazine, a lot of the material that, you know, we had got turned over. I don't know if copies of R&D Productions material got turned over them or not. But, you know, they were covering all the same territory. We had 32 episodes outlined plus another couple of paragraphs saying other things we could develop, you know. And you don't know. You just don't know. I mean, we saw a lot of our topics covered by UFO Hunters. And our concept was quite a bit different. It was kind of a hybrid between being an in-studio and then a segment would be in the field, you know, that kind of thing. And we would have periods of the show where we'd recount or follow up on stories we told before or an ongoing investigation. And we hope to pick up some real field investigators like a Christopher O'Brien, you know, who could become like an expert and a field reporter for us on a particular thing.
And you wouldn't take like the work that Chris does, the admirable, wonderful work that Chris does, and move it to a different city like UFO Hunters did.
Well, you know, we would do it. We had in our budget an RV remote kind of unit that we could go out in the field and shoot and record and even broadcast live from there. That was part of the concept, and that was
But then once you get something, you would take it back to the studio and analyze it. I mean, this new show, Chasing UFOs, in the first episode, they got this pretty compelling footage, and that was the last you ever heard of it. I mean, to me, that's ludicrous.
It is. It is ludicrous. It's what happens when you approach Hollywood with a show that, you know, like this. It's like they have these ideas in their head about what sells. And you're in the middle of a pitch and you're pitching an idea and they start interrupting you like, well, can we make that into a younger woman and make her love interest? Maybe we can get, who's hot right now? Yeah, we'll get Kim Basinger to do that part. You know, you go, but that's a real character. Well, it doesn't matter. You know, so you just got to let go of the idea that you can accomplish something significant because they're going to turn it into what they think is going to get rating and you have no control. So you just got to decide to live with it and take the paycheck or get out.
Really sucks, pardon the expression, is that 95% of the people that work on these shows in the research departments, the in post-production, the crews that go out in the field, the field producers, the directors, they don't have a clue about the subject matter. And that is so frustrating. I just did a shoot a couple of days ago, all day, with ancient aliens. And I'm telling you, it's like trying to take a blind person and have them read an eye chart or a deaf person and try to start putting tones in their ears. There's a major disconnect between the machinations and the machine that creates this programming and the actual subject matter. To me, it's really disheartening.
It is disheartening because you're really operating on two different value systems, and you're seeing a clash of value systems.
Well, the thing also is that the way Hollywood views it is from the MBA viewpoint of it being product to sell. This is product to sell. How do we alter this product in a way that will get the largest audience in the demographics they have to reach, which is what, 25 to 49 or something like that?
Yeah, and it's all broken down like that, and they've got to jump through a lot of hoops and prove to the networks that there's enough interest to generate enough eyeballs in front of the TV set for them to even take an interest in it. And don't forget also, with the amount of channels we have now on cable, and TV being the monster that never sleeps, you've got to have product to put on the air if you want to keep your license. So you got to get anything up there. Like the first 2 years of Sci-Fi Channel, when they finally got their cable channel, and I had talked to them, they were very interested in our stuff, but they said, you know, we already blew our budget for the next 2 years, you know, buying packages of old reruns like the old Battlestar Galactica, the old V-series, and they're just putting that stuff on the air to kind of get the channel going while they try to develop their own material. And the guy said, well, contact us in about 2 years, maybe we can do something. By that time, I had to go out and earn a paycheck.
Well, you know, it's funny. With all the garbage that goes on TV, there are some shows I like. I like some of the stuff on Sci-Fi Channel.
Me
too.
Some
of it is really fun. Some of it is really nicely done. And we know the audiences, they grab it nowhere near what the big networks get, but they have some nice stuff, and there are really good creative people working. But trying to do something different, like a UFO show, within the Hollywood system, is just impossible. And we look at the experience of chasing UFOs, where they've got one guy there, James Fox, who's a dedicated UFO researcher, has done good documentaries, really good work. The fellow is honest to a bone, as far as I can tell. I mean, I've had conversations with him since the show went on the air, and he's very unhappy about how things turned out. He's hoping to work from within the system to make it better, especially if it goes to a second year. But you have gone through the Hollywood system more than any of us. You know, we can wish him luck, but it's not going to turn out. Richard Saradet joining us with Gene and Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
If you want to get your website online and you need reliable service, first-class service at the lowest possible price, there's only one place to go. Well, DreamHost has a special promotion with our show where they'll offer you unlimited disk space, unlimited bandwidth, one-click web apps such as WordPress, 24/7 support. You can save over $55. You want to know how? Go to dreamhost.com/radio, dreamhost.com/radio.
Magazine provides true reports of the strange and unknown. Keep up with the latest on angels and miracles, psychic phenomena, ghosts, UFOs, life after death, and much, much more. To receive your free issue of Fate Magazine, call now at 1-800-728-2730 or visit their website at www.fatemag.com. That's 1-800-728-2730. What are you waiting for? Your fate awaits.
That's the sound of your door being kicked in by an intruder with a single kick. That's the sound of the same door now protected by the Door Sentinel at MySafeDoor.com. Go to MySafeDoor.com right now and watch the amazing video. At MySafeDoor.com, you'll learn how to turn your home into a fortress with the Door Sentinel. 16 kicks later, and the Door Sentinel is still holding strong. MySafeDoor.com. That's MySafeDoor.com.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. Have you ever wondered why banks, stockbrokers, investment advisors won't talk about gold IRAs? They've been available since 1986, yet the financial industry won't recognize the value of gold for your retirement. Gold has outperformed paper investments, yet no word about IRAs. If you would like to have gold for your retirement, call 800-686-2237. Don't get left behind by rising inflation and low returns. Call 800-686-2237. Secure your future and call 1-800-686-2237.
Do you owe the IRS money that you can't pay? Are tax liens and levies ruining your life? Are you tired of being afraid just to go to the mailbox? If this describes you, then Dan Pilla can help.
Hi, I'm Dan Pillen. I've been solving tax problems for more than 30 years. In fact, I wrote the book that made it possible to negotiate settlements with the IRS, and I've helped thousands of people do exactly that. Call now at 800-346-6829 to learn how I can help you. You know your IRS debt will not go away by itself, but you don't have to live in fear anymore. New changes to IRS policies will help more people than ever before eliminate their debts once and for all. There's no need for you to suffer another day with IRS debt. Call 800-346-6829. I can help you eliminate wage and bank levies, release tax liens, and negotiate a settlement with the IRS that will put your tax nightmare behind you forever. Call 800-34-NO-TAX or go to my website, taxhelponline.com. That's taxhelponline.com.
25 years is reason to celebrate. Cash in on October deals during the 25th anniversary of Emergency Essentials. Going on now, save 26% off clarified butter, 24% off honey oat granola, and save 50% off a kitchen fire extinguisher. A must for any kitchen emergency. Stock your car with a Roadwise Emergency 72-hour kit, only $34.99 at BePrepared.com. New this month, two varieties of Mountain House just-in-case buckets. Your favorite Mountain House pouches packed in a convenient bucket. Find a super deal this month only for the Goal Zero Lighthouse LED Lantern and Nomad 7 Solar Panel. Iosad Potassium Iodide Tablets are on sale. And as always, check out the Emergency Essentials Group Specials now through October 31st. Call 800-999-1863 for exceptional customer service and Emergency Essentials low price guarantee. That's 800-999-1863. The choice is clear. Be unprepared or beprepared.com.
Hi, this is Don Ecker, and you are tuned in to the Paracast. Let me tell you what, you're going to hear stuff here that you probably won't hear anywhere else. Hear that, George Snorri?
We find that although he is the quiet researcher, Richard Serrett has a lot to say with Gene and Chris on the Paracast. Let's look at some of the things that you've embraced over the years and covered, and one of them is the late Dr. Carla Turner. Now, just so people will understand, she died back in 1996, I guess a year after my brother died, as a matter of fact. She was only 48 years old, and you think of the age 48, and that's not even middle age anymore, because Chris is a little bit older than that. Richard and I are a lot older than that, and we're still here. So we do know that Dr. Turner was a UFO abduction investigator and also labeled as a human rights activist. How so?
Well, you know, she's a remarkable individual. By the way, her doctorate is in old English studies. Now, you talk about a kind of a small little area to be a PhD in. And she was teaching at North Texas State in Denton. She has a very interesting personal history, more so than myself, of having, I guess what you'd term today paranormal experiences, visions, dreams, communications, things like that. She had a whole history of that. So she even tells a story, and I was trying to find it, and I haven't found it yet in one of her books, about this weird journey she took to India. And I forget the details, and I'm trying to find it. I was trying to find it for this morning. And it was like she was being guided there by visions and dreams and just told to go and then take a bus here and just stand there, and then somebody would come, and, you know, she'd just kind of went, well, what the hell? I'm, you know, in for a penny, in for a pound. And she ended up being guided to a monastery and having some interesting, weird experience up there, meeting a guru. And then she's, you know, all this happens, by the way, something that doesn't even belong in the time sequence, the linear frame of her life. It just kind of happens and she returns, like all this time passed. And when she comes back, no time had passed. It's very strange. So she was already out there in her world experiences. And hers weren't the average person's experiences. Now, is there a connection between that and that it came targeted for these experiences, which to this day I can't vouch for where they come from or who's doing it or what's doing it, but that it's actually a manipulation, that there's something being done, is happening from outside you coming into you, of that I'm convinced. How much of it is extraterrestrial or crypto-terrestrial or whatever you want to call it, and how much of it is sophisticated technology still remains a very, very significant question. And I tell you, over the years, I think one of the reasons they call me the quiet researcher is because one of the things I learned early on, and in fact, going back to even before I met Don and Vicky, was as I was very, very interested in kind of understanding this from a personal point of view. And even before, for years before I contacted Don and Vicky, I was doing my own reading and research, and I discovered there weren't as many books available. I discovered Jacques Vallée, and he very much shaped my thinking because his thinking seemed to reflect a little bit of what I'd kind of come to from my own experience, that this is much more complicated, not nearly as simple as being a simple, you know, extraterrestrial hypothesis. It's much more complicated, much more intimate than that. It's very vexing, and I don't think we'll ever totally understand it. But in order to try to get information, I found the best way is to have a big set of ears and a very small mouth and just kind of cruise around and be discreet and talk to people and don't make a big deal out of it. And what I sought out, I always sought out direct experience, you know, like I wanted to see if there was something worth pursuing myself. So I always like to go out and participate or experience or get in the field and see if I could find what was going on rather than just reading about it in books. What I found was that even with all this research, even with all the effort I put into it, I couldn't say I could give you a black or white answer on any of this stuff. I have lots of clues, and over the time I talked to a lot of people who worked in aerospace engineers, retired people, old military people. I just talked to everybody, and I just kind of hang in the background at UFO conferences. I would hang on the fringes, and I would, you know, and then if I want to talk to somebody, I would just kind of run into them and maybe chat and just kind of like just trying to stay low profile, trying to stay invisible and just try to gather information, you know. And it was mostly because I wanted to know. And even after all our attempts to get TV stuff going with Don and Vicky, you know, Don and I had to go on various paths and make our livings. And I had to go and, you know, support my now growing family. My passion for it remained, and my list of contacts, people I sought out information from, you know, quietly grew. And it was just, again, I was looking for myself. I wasn't at this point looking to produce anything or make money off it. I just wanted to know, you know, so that's how I went about it.
Okay, so moving towards Dr. Turner.
Yeah.
Explain about her life and her research. And was there any reason to suspect her death?
Yeah, I think there is significant reason to suspect her death. I really do. You know, one of the things, and as far as who, what might have been involved in that, that's another very big question. You know, was this a result of some sort of medical experiment where they're taking people and trying to alter something in them, and maybe they haven't perfected it, and there are certain side effects? You know, the fact that she died of liver cancer, that doesn't seem like a targeted way to kill, but it could be the byproduct of some experiment done on her or whatever. I actually was asked, that's how I got in touch with her initially, is that while I worked with Don and Vicky, I said, you know, I'd love to, like, you know, really write for the magazine. And, you know, I haven't written in many years, but it'd be fun. So Vicky said, well, you could do a book review. So I did a book review on Crash at Corona, which they thought was good enough to publish. And I did another one. I forget what it was. And then she said, well, here's the book we got, Into the Fringe. You want to read this and maybe write a review? I said, sure. So I took it home and read it and was like, have you read Into the Fringe, either of you? Have you read it?
I haven't read it, no.
I did years ago, after I met Carla.
What do you think of it?
Her story is so, you know, in many ways over the top. But having met her, and I saw how passionate and how focused and how, you know, obviously bright and intelligent she was, I definitely had to, you know, that tempered my suspension of disbelief in some sense. But I was impressed.
Yeah, I think that that mirrors exactly what my reaction to her was, Chris.
Richard, I'd like you to actually explain more about the book to our listeners.
Sure.
What is the story here? What is the main focal point?
All right. This, and I'll tell you, since he went to all the trouble to write on the back cover, I'll read it to you. Here was my husband, a man of intelligence and great analytical ability, telling me about two different childhood encounters with non-human beings. For Carla Turner, it began the spring of 88, but it had in reality begun much earlier. 2 months before, our lives were normal. Yet, here we were, being followed in the middle of the night, having spent the evening actually considering the absurd possibility that alien beings had somehow touched our lives. We didn't realize at that time just how deeply and irrevocably they would change our world. Dr. Turner, her husband, her child, there would be sudden, shocking discoveries of long-buried memories, as well as actual physical evidence of ongoing intrusion, the marks on their bodies, the sightings, the missing time episodes. Quote, sometimes I still try to pretend that it was all in our imagination. It wasn't in their imaginations. It was real, and it's all here in this most chilling, convincing account of alien contact since communion. Now, I think the most, for me, having read it, and after I read a book, I would call the author and say, okay, I wrote a review. Let me read it to you, and then we can discuss it and see if there's anything you want to say about it. And so I did that. And you know how engaging she is, Chris. We ended up talking like for a couple of hours on the phone and then arranging to get in touch again. And then it turned out it was, I think, the spring of 92, there was a conference at traditional every year run by Lou Farish, a UFO conference at Eureka Springs, Arkansas. Any of you been to that one?
That's where I met Carla, actually.
Yeah, was it then, back in 92, or?
No, it was in 94, if I remember. I think it was the last time she was there. Maybe she had been there in 95. I forget, but I was there from 94, 5, 6, 7, and I think 98.
Were you there? I'm trying to remember the exact year. I think for me it was 92, but I'm not sure. It could have been 93, and it could have been 94, because I've dug out the notes. But that was the year that Leah Haley introduced herself at that conference. Was that the one you were at with John Mack and Leah Haley and John Carpenter?
I think it may have been the year after that. Okay. I think 94 was my first year.
Well, it seems to me the focus of that conference was usually the abduction phenomena.
On our previous episode of the Paracast, we featured Mike Barra talking about lunar and Martian mysteries. Well, coming next week, we're going to look at a counterpoint from a former TV producer with expertise in space travel known as Expat. That's the name he's going to go by next week. We will continue with Richard Saradet. He is a quiet researcher, and we're talking about the life and times of Dr. Carla Turner. Dr. Turner was a UFO abduction researcher, but also someone who had herself been abducted. With Gene and Chris, you're in
the Paracast.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio?
Something more important.
Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
We also have swag. You know, we have all these exclusive Paracast things that you can buy. We've got, like, I guess 60 or so different items. And entails T-shirts, sleeves for notebook computers, iPad cases, mouse pads, the Paracast Jumbo Tote Bag, all sorts of T-shirts and jackets and stuff like that for men and women. We have a Paracast aluminum water bottle. All this stuff, you go to store.theparacast.com, store.theparacast.com. What makes it special is that the items are the best quality, you know, great T-shirts, fabrics, and they have our official logo on them. That's what makes them special, in multiple sizes and colors. We even have stuff for children, stuff for women, stuff for men. We have all sorts of sizes, like small up to X large. A lot of good stuff. That's the swag from the Paracast. You go to store.theparacast.com, stop by, and take a shopping tour.
What do you do when your propane runs out and you don't have a large amount of wood for cooking? That's when you need a Grover Rocket Stove from StockStorage.com. The Grover Rocket Stove starts easily with any combustible material, like junk mail, small twigs, leaves, weeds, or dry sagebrush. Then just add a small amount of kindling wood, and you'll be cooking entire meals in minutes. Grover Rocket Stoves are made right here in the USA, and are built to last a lifetime, using heavy-duty thick-gauge steel, and are painted with high-temp paint to withstand heat. Go to StockStorage.com and see three great Grover Rocket Stoves, stainless steel, heavy duty, or our original Grover Rocket Stove for only $135. And get free shipping to the lower 48. For phone orders, call 801-361-6984 or go to StockStorage.com. That's 801-361-6984 or StockStorage.com. The original Grover Rocket Stove minimal wood use cooking stoves, available exclusively from StockStorage.com.
So you don't want to carry a gun, but you do want to ensure your personal safety. Then empower yourself legally with self-defense products from StunGunMikes.com. Stun guns come in more shapes than just what you see on TV. Now you can get a powerful mini stun gun that fits in the palm of your hand, a stun baton, or a cell phone or lipstick stun gun. StunGunMikes.com also carries real spy gear, like bug and metal detectors, and discreet car and home security cameras that hide in almost any type of everyday object, from alarm clocks to pens. Now you can see how your babysitter really treats your children. Go to StunGunMikes.com, spelled just like it sounds, StunGunMikes.com. Buy real spy gear from StunGunMikes.com, just like the exact same spy gear sold to the government, military, corporate security, law enforcement, and private detectives. Empower yourself with self-defense products now from StunGunMikes.com.
Every day, nearly 3,000 families enter into foreclosure and face losing their home. If you're currently behind on your mortgage, you can still avoid foreclosure. You can save your home, but you need to act now. We're Allied State Foreclosure Services. We're experts in saving homes from foreclosure. With just one phone call to us, you can stop the foreclosure process, lower your monthly mortgage payments, and save your home. Call now. The call is free with no obligation. 1-800-597-8843. Call us if you've been threatened with foreclosure, denied loan modification, or missed a payment on your mortgage. If you've been a victim of a predatory loan or are upside down on your mortgage, even if you've lost your job and you're worried about losing your home, don't wait. Call us now and let us help you save your home. You've worked hard to build a life with your family. Let us help you keep your home. Call now before it's too late. 1-800-597-8843. 1-800-597-8843. 1-800-597-8843.
This is Jacques Vallée. You're listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
Quiet researcher Richard Serenet. When he gets going, he's not quiet. With Gene and Chris on the Paracast, we will have whispered bumpers from Chris for the rest of the show. I know there was once a radio show called The Whisperer or something like that. But don't ask me to explain it. It was very bad back in the 50s. Bad show. Anyway, okay, so you met up, Chris, with Dr. Turner at one of Lou Farish's events. Now, in general, what is your take, Chris, on abductions and what might have happened to her?
Well, I think the abduction phenomenon is something ancient that has a history that goes back well into the Middle Ages, if not prior to that. I mean, you have Ezekiel and Jacob, and you go through the Mesopotamian cultures, the Harappan cultures, even as we heard from Antonio Huneas, there's some Mayan and even Aztec abduction accounts. So this is something that's been going on for a long time. I think as the phenomenon progresses through the ages, the details from the experiencers themselves tend to reflect the technology and the level of technology of the time. So we're seeing something that seems to be evolving along with us. And that, to me, is a really big clue. And, of course, Richard mentioned Jacques Vallée earlier in the conversation, and I think it's a point well taken, at least from my point of view. And we're dealing with something obviously reflective. I think the fact that Whitley Strieber's book in 1987, Communion, seemed to really jumpstart the whole modern age of this particular mystery. And I'm not sure if all the accounts that, are claimed are due to some sort of non-human intelligence or some extraterrestrial intelligence interacting with us. There's so much about it that's absurd. The level of technology, the level of medical experiments. I mean, some of them don't even reflect the state of our technology now. Some of them seem actually medieval. So to me, this is a real morass of possibly, frontal lobe epilepsy, sleep paralysis. I mean, there's all sorts of possible prosaic explanations that you can factor into this. But at the core of this, I think there is truly something going on. And Carla and Leah impress me as two women, very, very bright, very, astute, very observant, who I think really had actual things going on. And Carla really impressed me. And I was very saddened when we lost her.
It was heartbreaking. It was just sad because she knew she was dying, and we all knew she was dying. And it was just really, really difficult, and it infuriated you because you didn't know, and you saw that you were going to lose this amazing person, and she was a born leader.
Was she ill for a while?
It didn't show for a while. She, you could see her deteriorate, and the thing is, we knew she was dying, she knew she was dying, and it was just hard to sit back and watch it as she drove herself. She never stopped pushing herself. She was driven to understand this thing and driven to kind of like ring a fire bell. I think one of the things that she brought to the field, if you've seen her or heard her speak, she's very fiery, and she's a very quick thinker, and she has no patience for fools. at the same time, you know, her mind was open to unconventional possibilities because there was no conventional possibilities that could possibly explain what she and her family were going through. And Into the Fringe, I think, is a perfect title for the book because, man, this is some fringy stuff. And it's just an account, just a personal account. And it was so harrowing and bizarre that you don't know quite what to make of it. So I wrote the best review I could. And when I talked to her, again, her passion, the immediacy of her experiences that was still going on at the time, led me to fly out there in conjunction with the conference taking place that spring. And I arrived at Little Rock Airport. At this time, they had moved from North Texas to Little Rock because her husband had a job offer there to work for a computer software firm. He had previously been in the Army Security Agency, the same thing I enlisted for when I was drafted. And he'd served in, he was very bright. He'd served in computer software development in the military. And he now was working for a private company. He's a very soft-spoken, very quiet, very almost nerdish guy, if you meet him. Very, very nice man. Very easy to be around. And created a nice sort of, I think, balance to Carla's intensity. So she picked me up at the airport and drove us back to her place. And her place is right outside of Little Rock in a wooded area. And you just turn off this little highway, and there is a road down to their house, which is about 300 or 400 feet in. And they just cut the trees away, so there's this road. Then they cut the trees away for a clearing where they had built their house. The front of the house was at ground level. The back of the house was with a drop-off of about 4 or 5 feet to a backyard, which had been cleared. So behind the house is a big cleared area with grass and stuff. But around it and behind it were all tall trees and woods. And her backyard slanted down several hundred yards into a completely wooded draw. And then the rose up on the other side in the distance. There was like a higher wooded hillside. The reason I'm describing this is what I'm going to tell you right now.
Sure.
Right next to the house they built for herself and her husband, her son was now not living at home because he was college age, but you know, he had a room there. And they built a little mother-in-law house for Elton's mom, just about, you know, 40 feet away, a much smaller house. Well, you come down the driveway, and to the left is a mother-in-law house. To the right is the main house. And so I got to meet the mother-in-law. And she was describing some of the weird things they had encountered there. And the mother-in-law had also seen them. One of the things they were seeing, and this is just so bizarre, is coming out of this draw, just out of, like, seems like from behind the, down there in the draw sometimes, these rectangular-shaped black box cars would move, with little lights in the corners, would move up out of there, and just go right over their heads, you know, and out of the property. Now, when they moved to Little Rock area, how they found that property is another whole bizarre story involving these beings that showed up at our house back in Denton, Texas, that looked like the old MIB stories, these like the old character with the, you know, these. They look dead, you know. They're pale. They look old. They're wrinkled. They're kind of beat up. The clothes don't fit. They don't seem to know appropriate manners or anything else. And these two beings claimed that they had animated these bodies just to use them temporarily to communicate messages to them. This is the kind of stuff she was going through. And they advised her to move from where she was. And when the offer came for the job, they said, okay, everything's pointing in that direction, let's go. And somehow, I don't get the details, but this property was found with the help of these two weird beings that showed up at Carla's once or twice. And how strange is that? How fringy can you get?
That's pretty strange. Richard, I have a question from one of our forum posters, Chicane, who's been a member at forum.theparacast.com for about 2 years. And he asks, I hope I'm not too late to ask this, but Carla's book was one of the first I've read on UFOs and on the abduction topic. One of which made quite an impression was Masquerade of Angels.
Absolutely.
I enjoyed reading that book, but actually I tend to see it more as a novel than a real story due to the incredible, some may say insane, material it contains. So his question to you is, do you know if this is a real or a fictional story? And if it's real, do you know the real identity of the main character of the story? And he puts in parentheses, Ted Rice, I believe. It's been a long time since he's read the book, so he doesn't recall. If so, what is he or she doing now?
That I don't know, because Carla was determined to protect his identity. But, you know, I talked to her extensively about that book. And by the way, Chikani, I have that book right next to me right now, and I brought it for this conversation because I think that book has a lot to teach us to consider about what we call the abduction phenomena and your interpretation of what's going on for you. If you've read the book, have either of you read that book, Masquerade of Angels?
It's been a while. I did, but it's always struck me as one of my favorite titles of a book about the UFO phenomenon.
Yeah, and I think the book really, really will turn people on their head, much like Valet is saying, or Keel is saying, you know. Do you
accept it all at face value?
The book? At face value, you mean how she writes this novelistic book about Ted's experiences based on her interviews and conversations with him? I have to take it at face value since I didn't get a chance to interview the guy himself. I'm relying on the fact that I consider Carla a woman of integrity who's not trying to pad, but trying to reflect. But, of course, it's being filtered through a human mind and her mind as best she can. So, no, there's no absolute way of determining that. Do I buy it? I buy it in the same provisional sense you buy anything that comes as a report to you.
I'll tell you what, we've got so much more to talk about. We're discussing this all with Richard Saradet, focusing on the life and times of Dr. Carla Turner, who died, 16 years ago, an abductee and abduction researcher. A lot more to come. With Gene and Chris, you're in
the Paracast.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN. Great talk radio starts here.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. If you'd like to listen to GCN programs on the go, I have great news. GCN has created a Droid and iPhone application, and it's free. Just as easy as going to GCNlive.com, click on the banner, and download. Before you know it, you'll be listening to your favorite hard-hitting GCN shows, live or on demand, right on your Droid or iPhone, 24/7 and on the go. So download the Droid and iPhone app free by clicking on the banner at GCNlive.com. Thanks again for listening to GCNlive.com. Again, that's GCNlive.com.
We the people grow cotton, weave fabric, engrave ink, embed strips and fibers to protect from counterfeit, then carting to a private bank, having it lent back at interest, forcing taxes to service debt. This capitalism, or was Jefferson correct when stating a central bank issuing the public currency is a greater menace to the liberties of the people than a standing army? Ted Anderson, I'm placing a free silver dollar in a book that explains our monetary system. Call for your copy, 800-686-2237. It's time to understand the system. Call 800-686-2237. That's 800-686-2237.
Hey, this is Steve Schultz, and you've been hearing top radio personalities talk about longevity and how people are getting healthy and making an income at home. You see, I've built a 7-figure income by just following this simple program to success, and I'm putting on a free seminar to share the secret with you. Now, think about this. Do you know anyone that wants to lose weight or maybe get healthy? How about saving money on items that they're already purchasing and get paid while they do it? Of course you do. The system is so simple, and it works. Don't miss my 90 for Lifestyle Tour, Tuesday, October 9th, 6:30 p.m. at Scott Highlands Middle School in Apple Valley, Minnesota. Or you can call 877-279-9422. Hundreds of thousands of people are already working the simple system, and you should too. That's Tuesday, October 9th, 6:30 p.m. at Scott Highlands Middle School in Apple Valley, Minnesota. Call 877-279-9422. Again, that's 877-279-9422.